Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday.
You know what Friday is?
TGIF?
Yeah. What's TGIF? Isn't that a restaurant chain that was killed by millennials?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But before that, it was an urban slang.
Thank goodness it's Friday.
Yeah.
That's such urban speak. But it is, Friday's always, you know, it's kind of arbitrary now because I feel like everything we talk about can touch on fascism. But we always have to like take the stretch a little bit extra and say, this is how it ties into fascism because we've established this ritual of recognizing fascism
Friday.
On Fridays. And it's also episode 201.
Whew. Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day that this was going to be episode 201. I was thinking, do you think we'll ever make it to 2001?
That'd be a space odyssey.
That would be.
2001, no, that would take like...
I don't think we'll make it.
I feel like at that point...
I'll be dead.
I don't know. Like it'd take at least 10 years to get there.
Yeah.
Longer now because we don't do it as often.
Right.
That could be a retirement plan there, Dan.
There we go. All right, so we're talking about, I guess we should introduce ourselves. Mm-hmm. I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Van Steenwijk. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination. Good morning, everyone, in CK.
Yes, good morning.
201, a fascist odyssey.
That's right, instead of a space odyssey.
Close the Pompeii doors. I can't do that, Dave. Yeah, anyways.
Right. Okay, so this week's topic is related to Christianity and colonialism and kind of how we got here and what happened with that. And, I think the other thing that we haven't really touched on much, but obviously has been huge in the news, is the latest fighting between Israel and Hamas. And, I feel like all these things are just so interconnected, right? So interconnected that, mm-hmm. once you start to unleash this supremacist ideology into the world, basically all kinds of really bad things happen. It's so tragic because as minority voices within what we've come to call Christianity are constantly pointing out, the Jesus movement was about not being supremacist. It was about embracing and siding with those who were trampled on. By the people that think of themselves as supremacist. And yet it can get so easily flipped around.
It's astonishing, like how much, so with Palestine, Israel, and the conflicts that are happening there, we can clearly see within the United States context how a particular type of Christianity emboldens it, but it's easy to do that because, like, you know, Trumpian evangelicals are an easy target. The thing that I find more challenging is getting people who generally think of themselves as progressive to recognize the roots of this sort of thinking within their own Christianity. Like, yeah. the pieces are there. Like, it's not I was in a class, I'm taking a class in liberation theology. I'm doing a DMin at United Seminary. And one of the people there kept on going off about how God is a white supremacist. And part of the thinking I think she had is still buying into this idea that somehow God, if there's authority, and then if people have authority, then God has the most of it. And so we have this already have this construct of God at the top of a pyramid. So God is somehow more like Benjamin Netanyahu than a little Palestinian boy. Like, right? Like, maybe they wouldn't put it that way, but somehow God is ultimate authority, and it kind of trickles down. And really, it's about using that so that anything bad that happens is because God chose it. And so really the idea is to bring everything under subordination of the ultimate authority through obedience. Like this kind of framework itself lends its, it right. moves in that direction, because as soon as you start believing like this is what God wants, then you believe you are justified in enforcing it upon people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, and you know, what's fascinating to me about that frame, right, is that it basically is a projection of what people experience humans doing to each other. Mm-hmm. Right. So human beings, you know, we wake up in this world where there are all these, you know, as I like to say, psychotic warlords that are these violent authorities. And we go, oh, okay, so now if I've got this image of what God must be like, well, God must be just a bigger, badder, psychotic warlord. And now you take this frame that you're experiencing in your life, in your world, and you just project that out into the sky. And, you know, there's no reason to be doing that other than this is what you experience. And so this is an image that you have create this thing we call religion. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are other images out there, but they become these kind of minority images, in part because the psychotic warlords are constantly traumatizing everybody. And that's what we're all, you know, caught up in all the time. And so it's just very easy to say, okay, well, God is just more of a psychotic warlord. And when we think about something like justice, we think, oh, well, that just means that the biggest, baddest psychotic warlord is going to come kick ass on the little psychotic warlords. And then, you know, everything will be okay. And so, yeah, I mean, if that's your primary frame that you project onto the universe, yeah, then that God is a white supremacist. I mean, that's a good label for that image.
Well, and even if you don't have that view of God, it's easy to like. There's so many things baked into our way of seeing the world that we don't stop and think about. So like a good example is this whole polarity between civilized and barbarian. And I get into all sorts of kind of arguments with people around this because it touches on everything from like whether or not if someone cusses, that means they're dumber. Like that's an easy one to pick at. And I like to use that one a lot, that somehow if someone is uncouth in speech, that they're dumber is still part of this framework of civilized equal a certain set of etiquette versus someone who's kind of dirtier. We see that with Palestine, Israel right now. So there's this idea that a lot of Americans, a lot of Westerners have that somehow Muslims are more barbaric than European people. And somehow Israel is kind of honorary European, like that's the way people tend to think about it. And so like, even if Israel is killing more of people in Gaza, it's unfortunate, but really they're the legitimate people. And then the people in Gaza are a bunch of terrorists, i.e. barbarians. Like that whole way of seeing things has been baked into Christianity for centuries now, although it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be intrinsic to Christianity. It's just by historical force and certain tendencies within Christianity, it's become pretty normative to see things.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, just before this, I was, you know, talking with Gregory about this. What is the whole mental twist that has to happen to have these white people who claim to be worshiping somebody that really looks more like that little Palestinian kid, mm-hmm. right? Than themselves, the white person. And yet, you know, they have this racist ideology. Well, a lot of it has to do with the, with images, you know, and I mean, for years, I've joked about the fact I go into some new church somewhere and I'm like, okay, where's the white Jesus picture?
There's always,
and there's, and everybody that's been in a church in America knows exactly the picture I'm talking about. I mean, it's in there every time. And sometimes lots of them, right? Lots of really big ones. And so you've got generation after generation growing up looking at that picture. Why would they think about Jesus being a brown-skinned Palestinian? I mean, they never would. You know, Jesus is a white guy that speaks English. And, you know, and then that allows you to enter into that entire frame, right? So that's who civilized people are. That's who the people that God loves are. That's who the best people are. I mean, it's all just right there. And then, you know, it's only one small step to, well, this is the master race, right? And it, I mean, it's a very, it's not a hard leap at all.
No. I'm noticing that there are less people watching today than usual. It's probably, it's, I don't know why people aren't excited to talk about colonization. Right. Yeah. And we took a break on Wednesday, so I understand that. But please get your comments in, because as much as Dan and I like talking to each other, we really welcome other comments and feedback.
Yeah.
So that we can make this a
we like your comments more.
Yeah. We rely upon your comments to spark interesting things. Otherwise, it's just us doing what we're doing right now. so here's a question, you know, just to kind of frame it.
I see
a
comment. Okay, Catherine's coming in.
Let me just get this comment in just to frame it for people to think about. If we think about different kinds of Christianities, because Christianity as one thing is kind of a, that's not really one thing. There's a bunch of different kinds of interpretations and expressions of Christianity throughout the ages. What is it that makes one imperial and the other anti-imperial? Like, what's the special sauce, and how do you nurture it? Like, I mean, that's a kind of an important question. That's really kind of underneath everything we've been talking about, is like, what does an anti-imperial liberatory Christianity look like, and what are its qualities, and how do you suss out when your tradition is so, like, how do you know what the imperial and colonial tendencies are like, and how do you, yeah, so think about that, folks. Catherine writes, I believe that one blonde white Jesus picture is the most reproduced image in human history. The book, The Color of Christ, has some interesting background on it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I mean, if it's not the most, it's got to be pretty darn close to the most.
And the funny thing is, like, it's, I don't know, maybe some nerd out there knows who painted it.
But well, like, it's not, it might like we be in that book.
Yeah. It's not like we know most paintings. Like, if you look at the picture of Whistler's mother, everyone knows who painted it. Whistler did, because like we all these most images.
Is that like who's buried in Grant's tomb?
Exactly, but no one knows. People don't know off the top of their head who painted that Jesus image, because it really becomes.
Isn't it a self-portrait?
Yeah. What? That. Changes everything. Ellen is here, contemplating in the shadows. CK writes, "What's the point when you believe something that's antithetical to the actual meaning of the message?"
Well, the point, I mean, and so to get Mark at your question, I think it touches CK on what you're talking about. I mean, the point is that you are using something for another purpose. Right. So if I want to take over the world and I say, oh, look, here's this religious text that says that someday every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Ah, that's a perfect proof text for taking over the world.
going to soften the ground for the return of Christ.
Yeah. And so I'm going to use that for my purpose of taking over the world. And so, I mean, to me, and this is one of the things that I think is kind of the most direct way to answer that question mark that you're talking about of what's anti-imperial, is show me the money. Right? Mm-hmm. Let's look at the money. Yes. Where is the money going?
Where does it come from?
Where does it come from? And where do you want it to go? You know, because that will reveal so much about what a person really believes. After George Floyd died, you got every company on earth sending out some, Black Lives Matter email and how we're doing some, racially intelligent thing in our company. And you actually look at all the stuff in all these companies and it's crap, right? So that's one, to me, that's one really key thing. All right, so our request for comments has been successful.
It has borne fruit.
Very excited.
Gus writes, one of the other really gross parts of support of the IDF is you have to homogenize both Jews and Palestinians as monolithic groups. I mean, that's part of what, good call. Jews who oppose the occupation or Palestinians who are from historic churches complicate things.
Right. Yes.
Yes. Anything that deviates from like this sort of, this narrative of Israel is our ally in the Middle East and they support freedom, democracy, and all the good things. And then there's this terrorist group of people who really had no real reason to be there because the land was barren before Israel showed up. Like all this sort of way, anything that complicates that narrative is just swept aside.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, propaganda always wants to flatten the conceptual horizon, yeah. Right? And just have these labels that supposedly apply to everyone as a way of making things very, very simple. And I've spoken with many Palestinian Christians who get this, and they're like, okay, so all these evangelical Christians in America are supporting Israel killing us, but we're Christian. Why doesn't that seem to make any difference to them? Right. And, this is where we see the imperialism and the racism and all of that come into play. And many of these folks that I know and have talked about have said that, Christianity is basically going to be eliminated in Palestine. As a result of all this kind of stuff. And, why is it that American Christians have basically zero concern about that? Well, it's because they're brown people.
That's a fascinating glimpse. One, I don't think someone, if they're not Christian, is somehow more worthy of persecution or anything. Like sometimes there's that kind of overtone in some of the comments, but it shows like what's at play. Like the reality is if Israel had like ghettoized communities of Scandinavian Lutherans, people would be acting different about this. Right. We all know that. It's because it's not just about Christianity. It's not because like evangelicals don't think of those Palestinian Christians as real Christians the way that they are. That's right. Because they lack certain qualities, just like African Christians aren't. I mean, they're Christian, but are they Christian? Like there's that, and it's because of this civilized barbarity kind of polarity thing. They're brown. They're really kind of Muslim-y. Like there's all these sorts of like weird assumptions that go into it that are really gross. And if you read between the lines, they're just kind of laying out there. It's just people aren't super overt all the time, but it's really a supremacist narrative and it's Western white supremacy, even if it's not named as such. Catherine writes, since blonde Jesus is the most common picture in the world, no one should feel bad about retiring from a church well. There are literally so many more where it came from.
Yeah, you know, I've actually seen them for sale at garage sales in Minnesota.
Why should they? I mean, you think they just give those things away? I mean, the frames are worth something, though, I guess. So.
You know, usually the frames are pretty tacky, actually.
Yeah, it's usually those, yeah, weird kind of plasticky, almost looking like wood kind of things. Kathleen writes, might be just me, but I didn't see the announcement of today's broadcast. Almost didn't tune in, but I'm glad I did. Yeah, thanks for tuning in. And I, who knows? Algorithms are like digital alchemy to me. I don't understand them. Ellen writes, one thing I've been thinking about recently is I'm culturally Christian no matter what I do. And white culturally Christian atheists think when they reject God, everyone everywhere should reject God without realizing they are trading containers for the same content. That's a great point. And
yeah,
and there's a lot to that.
Yeah, there's a lot to that.
Because question of like beliefs that one formally ascribes to versus how one is formed is it's a messy soup. Yeah. But you're right. There is a general sense. Like Bill Maher just comes off like an arrogant evangelical to me, but for his weird shit instead of like, it's not even really good liberal. It's like kind of weirdly inconsistent. Yeah. Just dude bro mentality. But you're right. Like if you just, and I talk about this commercial for the book Unkingdom. I talk about this in the book Unkingdom and other people talk about this. Like you just, if you exchange the idea of the gospel for spreading democracy or spreading the free market, like you can see a lot of these mechanisms. And Max Weber talks about this. This is the spirit of capitalism stuff. Capitalism or this the global system we have now really flows out of kind of Christendom. And some of the frameworks have changed, and we've adopted this thing called secularism that kind of obscures it. And again, another person who folks who are interested in this could read is Talal Asad's book, Genealogies of Religion. He talks about this project of secularization and how it's an obscuring force that's kind of a little dishonest. But all these stuff are vestigial limbs of Christendom.
Yeah, I mean, culture is so much more than just a single belief. And mm-hmm. and so if we don't understand that and we think, oh, I can just reject this one belief and therefore now I'm magically not part of this culture, I mean, that's just sort of ridiculous.
Cheryl writes, it's that domination thing, man over man, male over female, adult over child, man over nature. Can you tell I've been reading Rayon Eisler? I don't know if I said that right. This comes from Daniel speaking earlier about where it all begins. God mm-hmm. almighty and powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you know, if you accept all of those frames as objective and like a law of nature.
Yes.
Then automatically you're stuck. You just have entered this realm from which there is no escape if you just assume that that realm is the way things are. But it's not. It's just a particular conceptual framework.
This idea that it's also fascinating, like a lot of the supremacist stuff, they often will try to appeal to some sort of scientific laws of nature and order. And that's usually where you can, it's where we see a lot of oppression today being like people will root like heteronormativity, patriarchy. It's always some sort of appeal to natural order, which is usually when you should take a step back and say like, why?
When you should run.
Yeah. Maria writes, I have wondered about how Jesus suggests that the chosen ones are the servants of all. If we really are Christian white supremacists versus just white supremacists, then wouldn't we see our role as really serving everyone else as foot washers, as doing the things that no one else wants to do? Yes, but also like this is where it gets all twisted is almost all the conquest that's happened within Christendom, people have claimed it was altruistic.
Right.
Even Andrew Jackson, like I was, you know, Andrew Jackson, one of the worst presidents among a whole litany of bad presidents towards indigenous people. His whole justification for like disrupting tribal communities and displacing them and taking their land is for the, so that they might accept the gospel. It's like it's framed in altruism. And I don't actually even doubt that he meant it. Like, I think he probably did. Like, a lot of these people meant it. They thought that they were doing service. It's just our categories of service, I guess, are screwed up.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, and this is a super important point because, I mean, it is amazing to me to hear, you know, powerful white people talk about how much they are servants and working for justice. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the language. And it's, you know, again, the way the human mind works, and this is why, you know, we keep talking about contemplative psychology and spiritual practice, because it's so important to actually understand how our mind functions, you know, which we don't really pay attention to because it functions very well on its own. And, you know, we don't really have to think about it. But we can take any concept and turn it 180 degrees around and then convince ourselves that we're actually doing what the original concept said we're doing. You know, there's a great example of this at Standing Rock. And I may have talked about this before, and I don't know how many of you saw this image, but on one of the days early on, you know, clergy said they were going to come and be in solidarity of Standing Rock. And so there was this march from the camp to the front line. And this guy, this white guy, who I'm sure thought he was this wonderful liberal pastor, gets up there at the front of the line with a cross on a 20-foot pole and leads the march.
Oh my God.
And that's, you know, the picture that comes out. And I'm sure he thought he was being this great Christian servant and had no clue the toxicity of this image and the imperialism inherent in that image. And so it, you know, it can be very challenging to see this stuff.
This, you know, I suggest this book all the time, and it just pains me that very few people have even heard of it. Dorothy Sola's book, Beyond Mere Obedience, which I think has been rebranded or whatever as Creative Disobedience, maybe, or Divine Disobedience. Anyways, she talks about how in the West, obedience has become a virtue in and of itself. And so that God becomes essentially an empty signifier. You can put anything in there. And so that the worst habits of Christianity, even as we move away from Christianity, remain. So like somehow this, she would look at Nazism as an example of something that took the worst aspects of Christianity but threw away the best aspects. And so this is where she coined the term Christofascism. And this is, you know, you see this, like the way you can tell how baked into a system it is, see what happens when you directly defy or contradict the powerful people in an organization.
Reminds well, like try, like try getting that white Jesus picture out of a church. I mean, you will suddenly see Christofascism appear very, very rapidly, especially if it was put there by somebody's grandmother.
Yeah. You know? Or like when Lace, we talked, this was like maybe almost a year ago. I can't remember the name of the progressive Christian group that she, that was selling stuff right after John Lewis, is that who passed away?
Yeah.
John Lewis is Good Trouble, like images, was selling like Good Trouble masks or some stuff right after he died, and it's a white led group profiting off of the death of a black man. And so she assertively but kindly said, "Well, where's the money go?" And man, they just went after her.
Yeah, they just went.
And this is a progressive group that happens all the time.
All right. Let's roll through our comments.
Catherine writes, okay, so that painting, it's by a white American, thank you, historian, white American dude named Warner Salmon, Warner Salmon, from 1935, sold in the Baptist bookstores and distributed to soldiers in World War II by the Salvation Army and the YMCA equals literally Imperial War icons. I mean, that's astonishing, but not surprising.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's great. Thanks for looking that up. Yeah,
thank you. Warner Salmon. Cheryl writes, exactly, they're brown people. Ellen writes, I thought I heard somewhere that the White Jesus painting was a portrait of a son of a cartel leader who needed to be beloved by the people.
That's great. Okay.
That's interesting. Ellen writes, one of the first steps away from white supremacist Christianity was, for me, was reading the book Brusko. You know, that's an interesting book. It's so fascinating because that book is beloved by lots of missionaries, but it does. It starts moving away from white supremacist thinking. I still think about that book from time to time. So it's basically this 19-year-old kid who has no experience or no business trying to be a missionary, just wandering around in the jungle to try to evangelize the Motolone people in South America. And he ends up becoming befriended by them and sharing the gospel, but then also helping stand up with them against the, I don't know if it's the Colombian government or something that wants to take their land. A fascinating book that shows the complexities of a lot of this stuff. Gus writes, I think there's another layer further. Were they taught by white people? If we have missionaries in that area, suddenly those brown people have value. Your church has been there for 1,000 years and is full of brown people, probably a cult or syncretic, so it doesn't count. Or there's some sort of vaguely Nestorian or Orthodox thing, or they don't have the true gospel. Good point.
Absolutely.
Catherine writes, when I say Warner Salmon was white, he was specifically the son of Finnish and Swedish Protestant. That's like white. The New York Times voted him best known artist of the 20th century back in the 90s, but none of us know his name. Now we all do know the lofty name of Warner Salmon.
God. Okay.
Alan writes, do you think Sean, I know we're never not a pronounce fucked. <It's so stupid. laughs> As awareness, he's not being a servant to Jesus. That Sean guy is like, I think he's somehow in the Hillsong-y kind of worship leader-y evangelical world. So I think that's who you're talking about, right, Alan? That's the thing.
I don't know who that is. Yeah.
So, you know, like Joel Osteen, I'm sure he thinks he's a servant. I mean, this is part of the challenge. What does it mean to be a servant? And there's all sorts of subtleties. Like, let's say we took Jesus at his word about servant of all, and the first shall be last shall be first. The people who are most likely to really ascribe to that will still say, like, they'll still spend a few thousand dollars to have a celebrity person come and speak at their church rather than the most saintly person they know. Right. Yeah. I get this. This is like when you have a conference or something, you have to pay for things, like whatever, but we don't elevate the most Christ-like. We look for people who have power and of some form, and we try to utilize that power. That's an example right there, and it's across the board. You see this all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is our relationship with power? Who do we elevate? Who do we affirm?
Yeah. Yeah, and we, you know, and it's very hard for people, I think, to look at this issue of power dynamic. You know, this is exactly what's going on right now around all of the racial struggles in our country with, you know, curriculum and, you
know, critical race theory being
critical race theory
by the Southern Baptists.
All of this because the people who are in power, many of them who are Christians who think they're servants, on some level understand that the societal power that they have that comes out of this colonialist heritage is at risk. Mm-hmm. And so they're gonna, you know, throw whatever crap they can at these things, trying to turn them demonic as a way of not losing that power. All right. Well, we're at time. Let's let Kathleen have the last word here.
Wait, well, we have one from Ellen and then Kathleen. Ellen, oh. So, yeah, Sean fucked. I'm just going to call him that. I know people are going to think I'm on
he's
in worship services in front of Cup Foods. That's the little.
Oh, yeah. You
know, people, I saw maybe that you should know who there. That is. Last year, no mask, past curfew, complete with altar calls. Yes.
I
remember we had a whole bunch of conversations around him and others back in those times. God's name.
Absolutely.
Kathleen, final word. One of my churches had an empty photo frame at the back of the sanctuary. It was supposed to be for the first missionary to be raised up from the congregation. Fortunately, for the rest of the world, no one volunteered to go forth and oppress others.
Another awesome, Kathleen story. All right. Okay. Well, thanks to all that showed up here today at this unpublicized episode. Really appreciate all the comments. Great to hear from all of you and think about you. And we will be back next week.
See you next week, everybody.
All right. Bye.